Hello, Internet. This is Ewan Spence calling. It's the end of the month, and that can only mean one thing. A look back at what has passed. It's a month that saw the air turn blue. It saw two countries turning to twins to power their song, and everybody in Spain apparently has had a go at the audition to try and get on stage for Eurovision. But now it's time to find out which of our jukebox jury judges have been paying attention and which are coasting on their memories. It's time to play No Plan.
I wonder if one day that you say that you care. If you say you love me madly, I'd gladly be there like a puppet on a string.
And there we go. Yes, it's time for another round of No Plan. Our time to find out how much our judges really know, because we've been trusting them in Ultimate Jukebox Jury and going forward into Jukebox Jury 2011 that they actually do know their Eurovision. That rich vein of history they're mining is actually theirs and not just lifted from Wikipedia. So this is why we have No Plan. It is the quiz that wouldn't die. There are two ways to describe this one. Both of them would invoke IP copyright lawyers, so let's say it very, very quietly. It is points for punditry. Yes, you can get a point for answering the question, but you can get more points for showing Eurovision knowledge and breadth and excitement about Eurovision as well. The other way of describing it is we're asking our judges to tell us things that are quite interesting. We don't have any forfeits in the background. We don't have any nasty buzzers going up. What we do now have is like three of the panel going, oh, I just thought of another pun, and writing it quickly down in their notes of paper. So you get points for telling us good, smart things.
Yay!
This is the panel cheering themselves in the background. You lose points for telling us bad things.
Ooh.
You lose even more points if I think you've been relying on John Kennedy O'Connor's The Official History of the Eurovision Song Contest book, now in its fourth edition, available from Amazon. Follow the link on eseinsight.com, and we get an affiliate fee as well. But exactly. So four of our judges are going to be the contestants. We're going to start with the returning champion. He's batting at 500. He's coming on a hot streak of one. His name, the guitar man, it's Danny Lynch. Hello, Danny.
Guten Abend.
Are you going for a different accent this time? I'd like to see that. Going to be great, because in about six episodes time he's going to have to go to Slovakia, and that's going to be hilarious. Danny, have you been enjoying your month of victory shipness?
I have. I've been reveling in it all.
You're going to hear it right down there. You've been enjoying yourself, haven't you?
I'm going to clear my throat there.
All right then, there are so many images there. Aren't you glad it's audio? Right then, we also have three judges you will have heard on Jukebox Jury. They are coming into No Plan for the first time, so they're all batting at 0 for 0 at the moment, all trying to depose Danny and take the role of this month's champion. First of all, we have, well, it's kind of hard. We have, he's smooth, he's sophisticated, there's just that air of something about him. It's Stephen Newby.
Good evening, Ewan.
You're going for the English, you know, that's okay, you can any language you like, but obviously you score more points. So confident in what's going to happen for the next half hour?
I think I've sold myself. No, I'm sure everything will be all right. We'll see how it goes.
Right then. So also coming up, we haven't heard him for a long time. Way, way back in one of the very first Ultimate Jukebox juries, we have the scholarly, the upright, the intelligent. No, it's not you, Paul. You're coming next. It's Colin McKnight.
Hello, Ewan.
So, Colin, we haven't heard you now since about July, I think. So what have you been doing in the meantime?
Well, obviously I've been following the national final season for the last few weeks, catching up on what's been picked for Dusseldorf so far.
Anything catching your eye?
No.
No? Okay, 1 point there. That's an early lead for Colin there in the scores. Well done. And finally, it's our academic. He's at Glasgow University, which is currently looking for a new marketing company to try and raise £10 million for the university. And we have Paul. So, not quite sure how that. Anyway, Paul Jordan joins us here at No Point. Ah, right then.
You're not Celine.
We're not playing Celine. Minus for the Celine reminder from Paul. You should know by now.
No, that's not fair. It's discrimination against French Canadians.
Okay, calling against the quiz. There's another minus.
Former Eurovision winners.
Winners. She's only won one. Incorrect knowledge. There's another minus.
Winners as in plural, you know, talking bad about previous winners.
He's trying. Anyway, as you can tell, points for Bondedry. It is fast and loose, so we shall see what's going on. We go into the first round with the scores not equal. We have Stephen and Daniel nothing. We have Paul in minus three and Colin with an early lead before we actually ask anything on one. So, points for Punditry, things that are quite interesting, tell us good or bad things. Let's go for our first question. Right, now, naming your song is vitally important at Eurovision, but with many languages and cultures and references to navigate, sometimes there can be a bit of a problem in naming your song. So we have the Israeli national final, in which you have a singer called Nob, who's closely followed by Dana International in the running order with a song called Ding Dong. So what other inappropriate songs do you know in the Eurovision archive? Danny, returning champion, you get to go first.
For me, it's one that's hot off the press. It's this year's German entry, Taken by a Stranger, by the lovely Lena. I mean, that's a song about date rape. Come on.
Oh, my...
Oh, Paul, straight in there. I'm going to get back on this one.
Yeah, you just stole my thunder there. Thank you very much, Paul. But really, Lisa, the song is quite a quirky song. But realistically, Taken by a Stranger, come on, come off it. It's. I don't think the Europe is going to understand that song at all, and I think it's going to do really badly.
Well, who knows? But for me, it's Turkey 2005, Rimi Rimi Lay. And as Paddy O'Connor said, there can be no lay without Rimi Rimi.
Quite rude. It's good. He's getting into the swing of this, Danny. You might have a problem here catching up. Right then, Colin, anything from yourself?
Well, I'm afraid mine has to be quite obvious, and it's last year's UK entry, That Sounds Good to Me, which surely did not sound good to anyone. Anyone?
Yeah, true.
Oh, poor Nikki French, so much a lover, but don't play that song again. That was perhaps, you know, an omen, really.
Yeah, but to be fair, once she sang it on stage, no one did play it again. Whereas Josh was saying That Sounds Good
Paul
to
dead.
Me, which is completely inappropriate.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Nikki did sound good, so that's the difference. What about Sweden 1985, Bra Vibrationa? Good vibrations, but it looked like, you know, it looked a bit kinky when it's written down, a vibrating bra.
You've just got a dirty mind.
Well, you're talking about being taken by a stranger.
For me, I think it's probably 1968, La La La. And the most unoriginal song title I can possibly think of. I don't think Spain really did itself any justice, but of course it won. So perhaps there is something that crosses the language barriers by singing like a child.
It's worth pointing out, I mean, you have Eurovision, you know, it's Eurovision. We've got previous winners that have been a bit dodgy, like Diggaloo Diggaley for Sweden, that won. Ding Dong for Netherlands, you know, so it's the home of kind of maybe inappropriate lyrics or bad lyrics.
Even,
so.
even Lulu, of course, even tried it. The UK's coined the classic boom, bang, a bang kind of genre that Eurovision is known for, so...
Yeah, and there was a Bani B from Israel as well. I mean, is that not a kid's language? It meant something. I would say B after every sort of letter.
It's like baby babble talk, isn't it? Baby babble talk.
The worst one was that, I can't remember the name of the song, Austria 1977, Boomerang something.
Boom, boom, boomerang.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right, very good.
That song was originally, actually, no one believes this, but it's always on these clips, one of the worst Eurovision songs ever, but it was actually supposed to be like a Mickey take of Eurovision songs, and it was deliberately meant to sort of be like...
Quite a serious message as well, didn't it? Because there's a thing about record companies and how they take all the money from the artists as well, so it's not quite as much of a joke as it might appear to be at first.
Sounded like you, I wasn't born then, so I don't really know.
And also... But, you know, we're forgetting it's actually Eurovision, you know, so the way the song comes across on stage as well is interesting. I mean, Switzerland 1979, Peterson and Mark, you know, they had everything. Literally, they had a garden hose, they had the shears, and they couldn't save it. I mean, so Eurovision, I mean, it's a great platform for, you know, pioneering perhaps quirky techniques or crap ones.
Could I also just give a little shout out to Lindsay D, No Dream Impossible? Unfortunately, I was.
Well, she's from Sheffield for a start, so everything's impossible there. I think probably the biggest letdown was probably some of the songs in the 80s and the way that they were named. Obviously, some of the examples we've already had, but other ones, of course, clearly And the name's just gone right out of my head.
Oh, that's minus points there. You can't have knowledge and not know it. Oh, there we go. Right, we'll call that there. Right then, let's have a look at the scores in that round. It's quite close. Do we have Paul sitting there on two? Matching stride for stride, we have Stephen and Danny both on four. They're taking an early lead. Colin is out there in front with seven. Right then, on to round number two. With Sjorn's friends playing a blinder to block Johanna's progress out of the Icelandic national final, Nott will now join a strong troupe of songs that never even got to play the Eurovision stage. Which songs would you say were surefire winners that were left at home? Now, also, this is a golden envelope round. I have an answer written down here, and if you match that answer at the end of the round, you'll score 5 bonus points. So, Paul.
Estonia, 1998, Evelyn Samuel with a song called Inista Sigafest Paivast. It was a beautiful ballad, and I think if it got through, it would have been top 5 at least.
For me, it has to be 2008, Sweden, Sanna Nielsen, Empty Room. I was there in the hall, and it was just a fantastic ballad, and they ended up going with that plastic face woman who I mentioned in the last show, so I'm not going to go on about her this time, but they went with this sort of boring Schlager song hero and went fell flat in their face and only managed to qualify to the jury vote. If they'd gone for Sanna, I think they could have gone top 5.
And of course, Sanna's coming back again to have another go, isn't she?
Yes, with a song called I'm in Love, which is through to the final, which will be in a few weeks' time.
I think UK 1995, Dear John, One Gift of Love. I think if that had got through, that would have won by a landslide.
There's actually nods of agreement from the panel and nods of disagreement. Danny says yes.
I had that as an idea, but it was a bit cheesy. It was all about cancer.
Well, you have actually stolen mine, Danny, so please, no complaints about that. I will have to go then for something off the top of my head, an Estonian song from 2008, and it was called 365 Days. Yeah. Very lovely song, very lovely ballad, beaten by three old guys in different coloured suits. Why do people choose that? I don't know.
And how can we not forget that fantastic song from 2005, Katie Price, Not Just Anybody? Realistically, come on.
Minus. There we go.
I'm sorry, but she is anybody's, isn't she? Pass herself around like bloody musical chairs, that one. For me, I think one of the best songs that never got through was even last year, Cheesy as Hell, Man Boy. Absolutely loved it. Would have loved to have seen Erik Saade doing that on the stage. That would have been extremely unique. I think Sweden certainly would have kept their record of being in every final every year.
Yeah. And he's actually come back this year with a song which is not even half as good. No. The same sort of dance routine, the same kind of cute style. But for me as well, Turkey 1999, a singer called Feria Başel and a song called Unutugumu Sandinanda. It won Con Song in 99, a convention song contest, you know, the Eurovision Fan Club song contest. And it was fantastic. It was like an up-tempo, kind of mid-tempo ballad, I suppose. And it was really, really good. I've still got it on my iPod and I watch it and listen to it. So it's great.
What about Anthony Costa from 2006? Not a great song, but, you know, Greek connections. And
Hold on. The question says, what songs would you say were surefire winners?
It was a great song. And also, there's a Greek connection there. Contest been held in Greece, but unfortunately we sent that other rapping guy instead, Dan Samson.
I think. Except for that song, that song would have been disqualified because that was actually released on a promo by the girl Michelle something who sang it the year before.
So those points you just got, Colin. Bye bye.
I think his connection was actually with Cyprus. Are you inferring that Greece votes for Cyprus and the other way around?
Never.
You call yourself a Eurovision expert.
I'm never inferring that. It's a blatant outright statement.
Absolutely. My God. I think that would be the biggest travesty ever if we had political voting, wouldn't it?
It would.
I think 1998, again, I mean, I know I mentioned Estonia, but there's also a Turkish entry that year as well by Sednem Paka. She entered the national final. I think she only came fourth with a song called Kal, which was great. It was really ethnic, really up-tempo, and it would have followed on from Dinle, which came third the year before in 97. And I think it would have really livened the contest up because you would have had several up-tempo songs, done international one, you know, Turkey, and then you would have contrasted that with Kiara, who eventually came third.
So there we go. We have our answers. Let's have a look what's inside the golden envelope. And it's Cindy for the United Kingdom. We sent Scooch instead.
I forgot about that. I was going to mention that.
I was going to say that. It's a rip-off of Loch Lomond, though.
My God, yes, I'd forgotten all about that.
No, because Didrik Solitayan sing practically the same song last year and came 20th, so I don't think it would have been up a next
Yeah, but he didn't have Rod Stewart doing backing vocals.
And also the juries. If it was in now, they would get half the jury votes, but, you know, juries went in 2007.
Mm. And also, if Cynthia had got through, she would have been sandwiched between the Ukraine and Romanian novelty acts that year, and it would have stood out like a beacon of quality.
Exactly. So the 5 bonus points stay with me. Scores at the end of round 2. Danny, who was went into this round with 4 points, still has 4 points after a little bit of belligerency there again. Paul pulls slightly ahead of last place and is now on 5. Stephen marches ahead on 7, and Colin retains his lead, staying on 9 points. Remember, only 2 of our contestants can go through to the final round to be declared the winner. We've 3 more rounds to go and then our open round before we reach that point. Now then, question 3. It is the pinnacle of some people's careers to perform at Eurovision, but other performers would rather have red-hot needles stuck in their eyes if they were asked back to sing for their country. Somewhere in the middle, though, are the performers that don't really care. Perhaps the performers that were under a contractual obligation or somebody had interesting pictures of their family. Who, panel, didn't really care about their appearance at Eurovision? Stephen, let's start with you on this one.
Michael Ball. Classic, classic. In fact, I even think he said he was going to stick needles in
his eyes. Bonus point for spotting the reference as well. Yep.
For me, it has to be Tattoo from Russia. It seemed like it was the record company that forced them into doing it, and even they didn't even turn up for half the rehearsals. One of the girls was apparently, in inverted commas, sick for most of it, although with his vocals you couldn't tell anyway. They basically ran around the stage as if they didn't really care and proceeded to come third and only lost because the UK didn't get any votes and because the Irish televote collapsed, or they probably would have won Eurovision that year.
No, I think they did go back and look at the actual vote from Ireland and they said Russia still wouldn't have won, but they did have a lot of bad. But Paul, it's probably something you're from the bad blood that Russia had over losing that year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they came back and they bit us all in the ass, didn't they? with Gerard Dima Bland, not once but twice. Sandy Shaw, for me. I don't get the impression that she really wanted to do Eurovision. I think it was maybe a platform for her, but she apparently didn't like the song and she didn't really like being associated with Eurovision. Well, then now it seems to have come round. It seemed funny that she changed her opinion around about the time when she was slogging her greatest hits about 2 years ago.
I'm going to be really controversial. Celine.
Absolutely.
I think she definitely used it as a platform. I think she was very apathetic. In fact, she doesn't even acknowledge publicly these days that the whole thing happened and existed. So,
but with Celine, I think she wanted to do it at the time because it was a good platform for her. And you can see, obviously, when she won, because apparently the night that she won was the night she got together with Rennie, her husband. Is that right?
Mm, that's when he stole her cherry.
Yeah. So I think at the time...
Paul, would you like to say allegedly on that one?
No, it's in her autobiography.
Fair enough.
I think this question sort of meaning...
Paul loses points for reading Celine's autobiography.
it's more around people about the time that they want to do it. And another one is Paul's namesake, Nevergreen, from Denmark last year, who basically walked around with a frown on his face. It was so miserable. He wouldn't talk to anyone. They had these big stupid glasses on, and in rehearsals it was dreadful, but in the end it turned out in the end and came fourth. Yep. But he didn't want to be there at all.
Well, having had time to think about this, I think lots of UK artists around the time of Sandy Shaw, if you look at Lulu, who didn't particularly want to do it, but she was employed by the BBC at the time and didn't seem to have any choice in the matter, have been guilty of that. But I'm going to go for a lesser-known act who looked completely bored on stage, and it's Precious from 1999, yeah, who I don't think were a group, really. There were just 5 girls that wanted to be famous. And to be fair, a couple of them have achieved minor success, but they looked...
Well, they've been mentioned on a Eurovision podcast.
Indeed. And one of them ended up in the jungle, I believe, and another one presents some children's TV. But they looked completely bored on stage. And not only that, but I remember hearing an interview with them in the week of the contest when they said they knew that either Sweden or Iceland were going to win the thing. And I thought that shone through in their appearance.
Well, I'm not necessarily going to even talk about artists. What about the script writers for Denmark 2001? I don't think they particularly wanted to be there that year. I mean, holy crap, have you ever heard so much really bad dialogue, everything in rhyming couplets?
I mean, that takes some skill, though.
Oh, it was skill, perhaps, maybe in Danish, but of course Danes are well known for their fantastic, public service types of shows. But
and that last time we had a Dane that was any good at rhyming couplets, he went and killed everybody.
Yeah, I think there's some of the dodgy, really half-dodgy rhymes that they actually put in there as well. I think it was quite desperate.
Although in saying that, we do remember that, and I think Yeah, probably because it's so bad, probably because it's so poor. But I couldn't tell you much about the other presenters from that kind of period, from 2000, 2002, etc. So perhaps it's had some...
Talking of presenters, I can't remember the woman's name because she was so terrible. Was that Russian girl from the semi-final? She was obviously some sort of model, and she just really didn't... She was the worst presenter I've ever noticed on any television programme in my life.
And it was the fact that she was paired up with someone that looked exactly like Matt Berry from the IT Crowd and the hospital thing, Garth Marenghi.
Natalia, her name was, and she's actually...
She was Russian. That kind of narrows it down.
Well, she was also in Clash of the Titans. She played Medusa.
And she also turned up in the thing for the Russian bid for the World Cup.
Yeah, as a supporter, because she's a well-known Russian kind of figurehead, I suppose. But also, for me, if you're talking about presenters, Erika Johnson. I mean, I love how Brits, especially British acts, you know, whether we're presenters or, you know, maybe Blue, it'd be interesting this year to see if they tell us about how big Eurovision fans they are. She presented herself as this big Eurovision fan. She clearly wasn't. She's doing it because the BBC obviously paid her very well. Again, it was a platform for her, but... You don't hear her talking about it. You don't hear her or see her in any other Eurovision thing anymore. And not that she should be, but, you know, she looked bored, stiff, and she was standing there wobbling from side to side. She looked uncomfortable. And I just think, in general, she was perhaps a bit embarrassed.
I don't know. I think it's perhaps her style. I mean, she's quite relaxed and quite chilled. I think that's a natural presenting style. But I think at the end of the day, I think she did a good job that year. And I must admit, she's one of my fondest presenters, to be honest.
Especially after that comment she made to that lady that we shall not mention anymore. But if you're talking about people walking from side to side, what about Jerry Martin? After he'd...
there, boy. We'll call the end of that round. Thank you very much. Before Danny loses every single point he's scored. The end of the round three scores are as follows. It's getting very close. Somebody's on 9, somebody's on 10, somebody's on 11, and somebody's on 12. I'm not going to tell the names. Just give it a little bit of frisson of danger. We're going to question 4 now. The horrible, catchy verse and chorus might not guarantee a song a victory on stage at Eurovision, but it will stick in the minds of all the dedicated fans and guarantee you immortality. So, panel, which songs are still keeping you up at night with the rhythm?
Okay, well, I'm going to go back 10 years to the 2001 contest in Copenhagen and the home country, Denmark, with a song, Never Ever Let You Go, which I think is the catchiest song I have ever heard. And within Eurovision or out with Eurovision, it's just so toe-tapping. I'm so surprised it didn't win. I still watch it, expecting to see them win. I won't say anything about the winner because I can't add anything new that's not been said by every Eurovision fan before, but I think that's the catchiest thing.
Rollo and King, Never Let You Go.
I see, now you just lose points for being smart. No. Now.
He actually looks like Adrian Charles, not think.
No.
No, Paul losing points for celebrity ID.
I've got one that I can't get in my head at the moment, and it's this year's Norway entry, Habba Habba. It's not sung very well, but it's just got this kind of catchiness about it, and the lyrics are just so easy to remember, and I've woken up in night sweats thinking about that song, let me tell you.
You need help. Ukraine 2007, Verka Sadichka. As much as it's annoying, once you hear it, it gets into your head. Really frustrating.
I liked... Sandra Oxenrød with Through My Window, unfortunately never even qualified. That still remains one of my favourite catchiest choruses ever.
Could I redeem myself from the Rollo and King thing by mentioning Signe Svensson, the female singer who joined them on stage halfway through and added...
Yes, you can.
Thank you.
For me as well, Moldova 2010. Really, really catchy. You know, with the saxophonist and the white, you know, outfit. Very 80s, very retro, but extremely catchy.
Another one from me, from Estonia, Once in a Lifetime, from 2000. Extremely catchy song. And again, I think Terry Wogan's comment that year was something about camel's hoof or something.
No, trousers so tight you can see what you have for breakfast.
Yeah, Estonia seemed to have a big thing of catching songs because there was the one that's from 2002, Runaway as well, was a really kind of catchy, really well-performed song. Yeah, so obviously that composer must have a good knack. Well,
I think, again, the whole Swedish schlager getting in there because, of course, Sandra Oxenrød and Salina being... Well, Swedish, obviously.
That's right. Same composers for Sandra Oxenrod's song as well. So they obviously have that style. Same composers for 365 Days.
And they were the glory days of Estonia's Eurovision history, as outlined in my article for ESC Insight, available online now.
You got 2 points for shameless plugging of a decent site for once. Congratulations. So we've 2 rounds to go. It's getting very, very tight and to the point of I'm losing track of all the questions. But anyway. Stephen, in the lead. 15 points. Paul, 13. Danny, 13. Colin, 13. It's very close. We've one more Eurovision question before we get on to tell us something we don't know. And to be honest, I'm surprised it's taken me this long to get to this question. Quite simply, it is the classic question that we're lifting from Radio 5 Live. It's Eurovision stars as biscuits. Panel, what Eurovision stars remind you of biscuits and vice versa? Paul.
Niamh Kavanagh, Ginger Nut.
There we go. One nice and simple. Danny.
For me, it's Linda Wagon Wheel. Let me finish, because not only was she round, like her dress was round, but there was something inside as well.
For me, it's Josh from last year and Tonks Snowball, because it's very appetising to look at, but it's all fluffy and not very much substance inside.
Oh, but he was such a nice guy and his mum was so sweet. We love Josh.
I never met him, so I don't have that.
Aww.
I don't have that appeal.
I was going to say the same, but about Diederik Solitangen. Very, very nice to look at, but unfortunately, substance, really not much there. Probably one of those little sherbet sweets where it basically just evaporates into nothing.
That's a sweet, not a biscuit.
Well, I know, but that's the best I can come up with.
Paul Oscar, Iceland 1997, Minhinsi Dance, Party Ring.
Oh, does anybody else want to try and top that? Are we? No, we're calling that.
I've got another one.
Oh, right, okay. This is almost double the quits here, Paul, you realise.
Right. Dean, Bosnia's governor, 2004. He was big, pink, camp and fluffy. So he has to be one of those pink wafers that no one really likes.
But he's not gay, of course. He's got girlfriends.
There's nothing wrong with having a girlfriend.
What? What's one of them?
17 for Stephen as we go into the final round. 17 for Paul, 13 for Danny, and 14 for Colin. And so we go into the final round. Tell us something we don't know. It is an open goal. Our panel can talk about anything that takes their mind. It doesn't have to be about Eurovision. It's their chance to try and go and take the lead to get into the final round. We'll go in reverse order. Danny, you're furthest back, so you can go first. Tell us something we don't know.
Well,
Danny is speechless. That's something we don't
know. Now, do we just go? No, he's still going.
Right, okay. One thing I'm going to get off my soapbox and moan about things.
Can we come back into my mind?
It's people who are ungrateful, especially. As if you're lucky to be at Eurovision and you're lucky enough to have press accreditation, then you should take it seriously and you should sort of... There's a lot of people that don't get it and get rejected, so you should be thankful. But then when you go to some press conferences and then they say, oh, here's some free CDs, and it's a big rabble, people trying to grab things, and then all of a sudden you get home and they're all on eBay. And I think, for me, that is selfish. Very well, if you get a spare one, you should give that to someone who would appreciate it, not sell it on eBay for a high profit.
You know, that is a strong entry. It's getting applause from all the panels. Danny there taking himself strongly into contention for the final round. Colin, you're in third place going into this round. Tell us something we don't know.
Well, my opinion isn't quite as strong as that on my thing. I'm going to talk about the year that Terry Wogan didn't do his commentary from the host country and did it from home. Does anyone know what year that might be? It was 1985.
I want to keep the points.
So, yeah, 1985, he did it from home because he was suffering from flu. And then in the wonderful Daily Record newspaper, local to us here in Scotland, with fantastic writers.
Local to you here in Glasgow, let's be fair.
Yes, okay. Fantastic writers, great input from people. Used to do great, fantastic Eurovision coverage and will do again very soon, I'm sure. Lots of letters into that paper about how the BBC could save money by not sending Terry Wogan because the coverage was just as good. And I quite agreed with that from then onwards. Campaigned for it, but it never happened.
So there we go. The problem with that, of course, is I know that certain of our friends out there who do the hosting as well have had to host from back in Finland, for example, for the Swedish TV, and they just lose all the contacts and all the background information as well. It's good for a year, but then you start losing benefits.
That's what Italy are doing this year. Apparently, they're not sending anyone. They're sending the... no commentator at all. It's going to be doing it from the studio back home in Italy.
So Italy, that means you have a free commentary box. If you'd like to donate it to a website that has a podcast.
Let's be honest, Italy can barely be bothered entering full stop. Even though they're back, they're reluctantly back, I think. But Terry Wogan, yeah, that's an interesting point, Colin, because he actually doesn't write all his own stuff. He's got researchers, he's got a team that gives him all the background information. He doesn't just sit there going through all the rehearsals. I mean, I think he watches just one rehearsal and that's it. Yes. So actually, the point of him being in the final, maybe not.
Unlike Paddy, who does all the work.
Yeah, he does. And he's there, he also goes to parties, he meets the fans, he's a lovely, lovely man.
So Paddy, next time you're on the quiz show, you're 2 points up straight away.
I don't know. What interesting fact? I don't know. I lost my virginity on a school trip.
Minus one, carry on. Was it to Celine Dion?
It was in Lourdes, no.
It was in Lourdes, minus another one. It wasn't to Celine Dion, minus another one.
Celine Dion has a new Vegas show coming out.
Minus 100.
Estonia joined the Euro in January.
Yay! Plus one.
Which is quite interesting from point of view, because obviously there's controversy with the Euro at the minute. It's like joining a sinking ship. But at the same time, to Estonia, it symbolises quite a lot. But also the kroon did as well. The kroon was their symbol of independence. And on the banknotes, they had a lot of national symbols. So it was quite a symbolic thing giving them up to join the Euro. But I think it's a good thing for Estonia.
Okay, an interesting scoring round there for Paul. Stephen, you were in the lead before. You're going to have to go some. Tell us something we don't know.
Well, apparently, lots of men who go to Eurovision don't have girlfriends.
I was going to say, is that it? You spent all that thinking time asking to go last, and all you can come up with is, some of us are gay.
Really? No. Apparently, Franklin Brown is the only Dutch representative ever that they've entered from South America.
Incredibly exciting, incredibly interesting, and now tell us something we don't know when you don't have your iPad in front of you.
Justin Parmalee was from Malaysia.
Indonesia, actually.
Did you know that Brazil borders France?
Is that one of the islands?
Nope.
French Guinea. Guyana.
French Guyana. It's actually part of France.
Does that have water all around it?
Nope.
No, so it's not an island. Right then, let's add all of that up. And that gives us an interesting little sec. Two people are going forward in last place with a stunning minus 80. Congratulations, Paul, for the lowest ever score on Nupois.
Fix. You say Eurovision's a big con and all political. Well, this was too, just because I knew my stuff.
Paul, thanks for taking part. We'll see you in the next show, more than likely.
Always a chore, never a pleasure.
See, the thing is, I'm in the editing suite. I could spin that round. But I won't. We'll just leave you bitter and twisted at the end. Then, on 16 points in third place, we have a tie. Colin and Stephen, both on 16.
Thank you.
I think that'll make us in second place, wouldn't it?
That would be a tie coming up from the bottom and from the top, second and third. Well, it depends. Which of you's a top and which of you's a bottom?
No comment.
I think Stephen should lose points for that.
No. I mean, he's being very discreet. I mean, because obviously he's not giving information about his partner, which I think is very honourable. Danny, though, of course, our returning champion, is in the pole position there on 17 points. But before we can find out who's going to join him in the chance to defend the indefensible, we need a tie-breaking question between Colin and Stephen. And Paul and Danny are going to be the judges on this one. We are going to ask for the tiebreaker a very simple question. Who should have came second at Eurovision last year?
Tom Days.
Lost and Forgotten.
And now to the judges.
Well, I'm biased because it has to be Tom Dice, since I am Tom Dice, you see.
Well, I don't like Tom Dice, so I'm not going to say that. But then Russia, that's a bit of a random one, Stephen. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not Tom Dice, though.
Well, the best of the two answers.
Can we go again, or do we have to make a decision?
Who would have came third at Eurovision last year?
Tom Dice.
Oh, my God, I can't actually...
Looked at the iPad, disqualified. There we go. Going in at the winning on the tiebreaker, that's it. Colin is going to be joining Danny in Defend the Indefensible. Stephen, thanks for playing.
Yes, thank you, Ewan.
And now we go into our head-to-head. It's going to be 20 seconds, and you have to defend the statement that I give you, no matter what it is. Whoever's the most convincing, in my opinion, will be the person who wins the contest today. So, Danny, you came in first place there with the most points. So you have the choice. Would you like to go first or second?
I'll go second, thank you very
much. Right then, so Colin, you're going to be going first. It's 20 seconds, and you have to defend this statement. I'm looking forward to returning to Germany in 2012 as Lena defends her miracle double victory.
Yes, I can defend that statement. Lena has come back in 2012, first returning winner to do that in a lot of years, with something completely different, completely off the wall. I've never heard anything like that at Eurovision before. I doubt we'll hear anything like that again. I think she deserves a second go at it. I think she deserves to be on the scoreboard for a second time. And again,
20 seconds there on the clock. Well done. That's good. That's a good defend. It's getting through there. Sounds exactly like the song last year, but there you go. All right, Danny, your 20 seconds are now. For Ireland to win Eurovision, they need to sack Jedward's backing singer and replace them with Dustin the Turkey.
Of course they do. I mean, Dustin the Turkey was so off the wall, Jedward was so off the wall. If you're going to be crazy, why not go even more crazy and just throw the whole book at it and go absolutely mental? Imagine Jedward and Dustin the Turkey are going to get all these votes of people who are going to be drunk and coming home and saying, oh yeah, let's vote for this, it's amazing, and you'll win Eurovision. It's going to be amazing.
Ian! He's really struggling for the 20 seconds there at the end. It's a close called contest. I mean, Danny was struggling to fill the time, but at the same time, Colin, I think the song this year from Lena sounds exactly like the song from Lena last year, but I actually think you were more competent over the entire 20 seconds, so the victory goes to Colin!
Hey, thank you, thank you.
So there we go, no points, it's over for another month. Danny loses his record, and he's now scoring at 0.333 in the batting, and giving us a strong giving us a strong 1,000 on the batting. We have Colin. Colin, congratulations for the victory.
Thank you very much. I look forward to the next victory.
We'll have a word with Stefan Raab and see if you want to come through again. Danny, you didn't quite make it, did you?
No, I came second twice and I've won once, so at least I've done better than some other people I could mention.
Oh, bitter to the very end. And of course we have Paul as well, that was there in fourth place. I'm going to have to go back and work how much you would have scored if you hadn't mentioned Celine. You may well have been in the final.
Oh, well, you win some, you lose some, you know, I'm not bitter.
Ah, there we go. And Stephen?
I think it was a worthy winner, actually. It's a good job that somebody else takes the trophy and then tries to come back and defend it.
So there we go. No point. We'll hopefully be with you again, if you're all enjoying the show, at the end of March. The Irregular News Podcast will see you back on Tuesday, www.escinsight.com. And Ultimate Jukebox Jury, the last final gasp before we get into the 2011 songs, will be here on Friday. I'm Ewan Spence. Thank you very much for listening. It only remains for one thing. Do you all know what that is?
Guitars!